Welcome to This Is Money podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me today is Assistant Editor Lee Boyce. And as we prepare to take another big step towards freedom, i.e. taming our hair, buying clothes we can actually wear in public, and getting pissed in the cold, we look at the future of work. Will we ever go back to the office full time, or is working from home or the shed here to stay? We talk about the rise of shoffices, how to claim home working tax relief, and give you tips on changing careers if you just can't face doing your old job, wherever it might be. Plus, we help you shock-proof your retirement, whatever career you choose. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, as many businesses ready themselves to welcome staff and customers back from Monday, we're talking about the future of work today. Spotify, IBM, BP, Phoenix Group, Lloyds, among a growing list of companies where working from home, at least in part, looks set to continue beyond lockdown. Now, the impact is being felt on our lives, our wallets, and our homes, with thousands of us choosing to quit the cities for good life in the country, or by the sea, or convert our sheds, our garages, and our spare rooms into offices. Have we been a little bit too premature, or is this here to stay? Lee, very warm welcome.
Morning, Georgie.
How has working from home worked for you? And what is the plan for This Is Money?
Well, look, we're in what, month 13 now of working from home, which feels quite a bonkers statement. We were back in the office last summer for a spell, a couple of days a week. It's actually worked out, I would say, on the whole. I feel very lucky. You know, I feel very lucky to A, still have my job, but B, and I know this is a real divisive kind of issue, but to have spent more time with my daughter, it's been a challenge, you know, because my wife also works. So juggling all of that has been a lot of fun and games. But I think the way we adapted from a company point of view was incredible. It was lightning quick. You know, from a company that had never really had a working from home philosophy to all of a sudden being able to work from home. And everything has been relatively seamless, Georgie, I must say. Even like from things like recording this podcast, you know, usually we'd be in a studio. We've always recorded the podcast in the studio. Last year we've muddled through and done it from home. In terms of what happens from this point onwards, and again, just talking about from a This Is Money perspective, we're back in the office now. So for the last couple of weeks, we're on a rota system where we can work 2 days in the office, socially distanced, so we can only be at half capacity, and only if people choose to do it at the moment. That's the way it's going, and it's been lovely to be back in the office. Our full-time place of employment is the office. So when the time comes, I'm fully geared up and I'm fully expecting perhaps it goes up to 3 days, then 4 days, and then back to a full working week. Perhaps in the future, we do 4 days in the office, we have 1 day at home. I have no idea what happens from here, but I think the way, just personally speaking, we've adapted has been great. And I think it's been the same for a lot of businesses. And the common thing I've heard from a lot of people is it feels like this working from home, even this sort of hybrid model, if you like, has been accelerated by this pandemic. You know, maybe this was where the future was heading, but at a slower pace. Maybe companies didn't want to have big, expensive office buildings anymore. Yeah. And maybe this was the kind of way things were going. But there's still a lot to be said about working in an office.
Yeah, and I think obviously it depends on the sort of business that you run as to whether you can have people in or out of the office. But it does change a lot of things. I think in the past, there was a bit of a reluctance to allow people to work from home. Perhaps we couldn't trust them, perhaps they wouldn't work as efficiently. And I think that will change to a degree. I personally have spent the whole of lockdown at home. I haven't actually been into an office in 13 months. When you say 13 months, Lee, I just imagine you with a chalk on your wall, just counting the months.
Scratching with my nails like I'm doing prison time. Yeah.
But I'm incredibly fortunate to be able to do what I do. And it's a variety of things. And things like the podcast, it does make you think, why did we not do it beforehand? But I suppose as you're in the office, it sort of makes sense. But, you know, I'm very grateful for technology for allowing me to do all the different things that I do. But saying all that, I miss colleagues. I miss the interaction. I miss the fact that when I'm writing an article, I go, oh, can anyone think of a good analogy for X or Y? And just learning from the people around you and going for a beer after work. So while I think I'd quite happily work a couple of days at home, I think I would like to work a little bit more in the office or in the studio. And I think there are some big organizations, big news organizations that are thinking, not for the foreseeable, are we going to have full-time back in?
I think that, again, as you said there, it does depend on your industry and everything. But the key thing about an office is communication, as in you bounce ideas off each other. You're there for support in all different manner of ways. And actually, a generation that I think have been hit the hardest really by all this are the younger generation, the people that are just starting out of work or just left university and looking for work. You know, it's that kind of having going into the office and learning from your older colleagues and getting that experience. It's very hard to do that over a Zoom call. And let's face it, George, I'm fed up of Zoom calls. I mean, I've had enough of Zoom conference calls and meetings and things, but you know,
it's not the same.
It's not the same. I'd much rather just be able to go to someone's desk and say morning to them and, you know, be there to help in whatever way. You know, that's how I learned on the job. And again, you can take that blueprint for a whole lot of other industries. And I think that's what lacks and misses the most about not being in an office. Other people may disagree. It varies from person to person. I think whoever you speak to, some people love working from home and it suits them and they don't miss the commute at all, you know, depending on how long your commute was, and it suits them to the ground. Other people I speak to miss the office, would like to be back in 5 days a week because their home is their home and their office is their office. You know, part of me doesn't like the fact that I've worked from home for so long because now my home feels a bit like a glorified office, you know, and home should be a sanctuary away from work. Yeah. You should be able to, you know, shed all of that work aside. Instead, I've got a desk next to the bed, which I sleep in. That is it at the moment because the home office that we had turned into the nursery when we had a child. At the end of the day, I would be lying if I said I wouldn't mind one day a week at working from home and 4 days in the office. That would be absolutely fine. But I'm employed to do a job in the office, so it's completely the say of the company. And that's what a lot of people are going to sort of wake up and realise, I think, over the coming months.
I remember at the start of the first lockdown, when everybody was told to work from home, and indeed we're still being told to work from home, but and they were talking about how feasible it would be for large numbers of us to work from home in the future. And I think the figure was put at about 5% of the workforce. I wonder if that's significantly changed, or actually, with us all still talking about working from home, I mean, really, how many of us and how many industries can feasibly still work from home successfully, do you think? Because we've had a huge number of people on furlough, let's not forget.
Really hard to put a figure on it. I know you mentioned a figure there, but there's actually, I think, because it all happened almost like at once with everyone, it was a kind of real test of all the sort of things that people would go. For example, if everyone worked from home, what would everyone's broadband be like? You know, it's a kind of, you know, if everyone was just like piling into their home broadband at the same time, you know, was that going to cause an issue? And there's little nuances and things like that that you take for granted in an office. You know, all of the things that you do in an office, you know, the energy that you consume, you know, all of those kind of things, the costs that have been absorbed by workers that are doing it from home. And I'm saying here that I've got my desk next to my bed and, you know, I'm in a 3-bedroom house. So I'm blessed to be in a 3-bedroom house. Mm. So people that are simply in smaller places, maybe they're in flat shares, maybe they just live in a small home, you know, because that's what they've got. You know, and for those people, I would assume they're probably not enjoying working from home all that much. But I think as a mass experiment of people working from home, Georgie, it's been a pretty big success. I've heard very few stories of people not being able to muddle through and get on with their job. Again, this whole issue around productivity, people say, I'm more productive working from home, or I'm less productive working from home. You should just be as productive as you can be in the circumstances that you're given. And I think that if you're able to do your office job from home, then there is a kind of argument to say, well, you know, maybe you can do that permanently depending on your employer, because things like the commute can be expensive for people. But where do we go from this point onwards? Because it's up to businesses. And as you pointed out right at the start of the show, there are some companies that are simply saying, you can work permanently from home. We've seen it in a numerous amount of financial services as well. You know, I've had friends that are in that boat that told their glossy, expensive central London office is closing permanently and they can work from home because they've seen the data from the last 6 months or year and realised that everything's still ticking along as it would be in an office, so they can do it. But this is quite a short, that's quite a short-term experiment, isn't it? Like 6 months to 12 months. Like, you know, it's hard. As I said, there's going to be people that are going to say working from home is great. Let's keep doing it. There's going to be people going, I really wish that my employer hadn't shut down the office. And, you know, I'm now doing this role from home. A lot of customer service roles. I've seen a lot of big companies, people complaining that it's been difficult to get hold of, you know, certain companies and things, because I don't know how good systems work at home and telephones and all that kind of stuff. So
I don't know about you, Lee, but I keep reading these articles about companies monitoring their workforce from home. That's a worry. Also, another concern is this working from home, if you work from home permanently, would only really work if everybody does it, because you can't be having situations where half of your workforce go in, you know, most of the week, if not all of the week, and then the other half choose not to. Because for things like promotions, pay rises, if you're visible, you're far, far more likely to get it. And I would hate, as a woman, and I speak, you know, generally here, and it's not all the cases, but that more women would choose to stay at home, perhaps care for the kids and work from home, and therefore would be looked over for things like promotions. That's just something to think about. That may not happen. That's just one of the concerns. Before we talk about our shared offices, Lee, you've been saying throughout this that you think that maybe all of those people who are moving to Cornwall or places in the country may be being a little bit premature. Do you still think that some of those people in the coming, I want to say months, maybe in the next year, might be regretting that decision?
Again, it's such a personal choice. I mean, I've probably flippantly said that a few times on this podcast, but it does depend on your individual circumstances and your employer. But it's just, I kind of knew friends of friends who were kind of moving out sort of semi-rural. Look, a lot of people that live in Essex, where I am, are commuters. They commute into the City of London. That's been a thing since the sort of 80s, you know. That is what people can move out, more space. That was already a thing. That was already happening, because there's more space out here, because there's more land than there is in London. But I've had friends that have kind of gone from being 5 to 10 minutes away from a train station that's then half an hour into London, like Liverpool Street, that have now moved into, you know, the bottom end of nowhere, and are a good half an hour drive away from a train station, thinking that they'll never need to go back to work in an office again. And, you know, who knows what happens with your job next? You know, these are quite uncertain times. I think that's the point I was getting at. There's a lot of job uncertainty. That's been leveled out a little bit by furlough and other measures that have been brought in place. So it hasn't been that mass kind of, you know, unemployment that we were expecting. But there's still that kind of, what happens if you do then lose that job and you need another job, and then that other job is an office-based job, and now you've just shot yourself in the foot because your commute is way longer and you're going to be miserable if you've got to go and commute up 5 days a week. That's a lot of ifs, that's a lot of, yeah, you know, coulds, and it's a lot of things to consider in the future. Those people might be happy as Larry. Maybe it all works out for them. It's so hard to know, Georgie, isn't it? You know, it's all down to people's individual circumstances. All I've known is that we thought about moving, and even moving, I'm like, I need to be within a 10-minute walk to a train station, yeah, because I don't know what the future holds. And still, you know, at this current time, a lot of the employment opportunities are in the capital, in this area, in the whole of the southeast.
Yep. As someone who moved to North Yorkshire during this time, I shall wait and see. Although I did only rent, so I do have that flexibility. But Lee, what about the rise of shoffices? Trend data from Google shows a sharp increase in searches for shed offices over the last 3 months, and some websites are showing many designs as sold out. It's overtaken hot tubs, Lee, for me, in terms of the amount of PR releases that I've got into my inbox about sheds. Shoffices, they are just simply a shed that's an office, right?
The shoffice, yes, office. Lovely. This really has been one of those things in the last year that's just exploded onto the scene, hasn't it? It's like the new conservatory. You're going to have shoffice salesmen coming up and down the country trying to flog you one of these for your back garden. It all depends how much you spend, Georgie, of course, as to how much of just a shed it looks like. You know, we've been told in the previous story that they cost somewhere between $5,000 and $25,000. That's quite a big range. And it depends, because a lot of people might just go for a wood option. If you go for a wooden option, that is just going to look like a shed. But if you go for something that's brick or stone or perhaps composite, all those kind of different materials, it might not look so much like a shed, and a lot of people choose to have you know, big doors, you know, those kind of like bifold doors. Again, it all depends on the size. Typical size would be sort of 2.5 meters to 2.5 meters. That's a small shoffice. Can go up to 5x3 for a sort of bigger one. It all depends on how it's going to fit in your garden. And lots of people have seen this as a way of being able to work from home, perhaps having a little bit more peace and quiet. I'll be honest with you, it's crossed my mind. I thought about it. I've got a nice little concrete patio space at the very back end of the garden. It's kind of doing nothing at the moment, and it'd probably be a good place to put one. But there are a lot of things you need to consider. I wouldn't just go blindly thinking it's going to solve all of your home office issues. All the sort of things that you might not really think about. You know, how good's your Wi-Fi going to be down there?
Yeah.
You're going to need a good booster in there, I'm going to imagine, depending on the setup. I've got a conservatory here. I've had to replace the roof since living here because the plastic roof was absolute nonsense. I don't know why someone would pick to have a plastic PVC, whatever material roof it was, but it just meant it could be used about a month a year because winter it was far too cold, summer it was far too hot. It was just unusable. We actually, just before the pandemic, I feel like a trendsetter, Georgia, I managed to get in before the pandemic in that January. I actually had the roof replaced and we had it carpeted in there, and we turned it into my daughter's sort of almost like playroom. And it's been a blessing, absolute blessing. It wasn't cheap changing the roof, and I did toy up having an extension. It gets expensive, but it's been a game changer. But my point is with that, is you've got to think about insulation for these things. Like you have to think about it being a year round use, because if you don't have floor, walls, ceilings that are going to be usable in the winter and the summer, it's kind of a pointless endeavor for me. And I think a lot of people might overlook that and just see these glossy things that just get plonked into a garden. I thought, oh yeah, that looks nice. There's that TV program at the moment, the BBC, I can't remember what it's called, but when they put on the VR headsets and they change around the whole home to show what it could look like, quite a lot of the time they have these sort of outbuildings, and I'm pretty certain that's driven a bit of this trend. But again, as a conservatory owner as well, we can't have it connected to having radiators, for example, so we have to have an electric radiator in there because it starts to be classed as an extension. So you have to make sure that you don't fall foul of planning permission rules. And another common one is to make sure that you build these things at least 2 meters away from the boundary of your home. Because if you put it too close to someone else's boundary, you know, you don't want to upset the neighbors. You know, that's the thing. If you plonk one of these in your garden and the neighbors aren't happy, they might look for ways to try and get this sort of looked at and get rid of. But as a rule of thumb, if it's going to be 2.5 meters high and it's going to be flat roofed, you should be okay. And then there's things to think about. Georgie, you know, you say your dog's not just for Christmas. Well, a shoffice can't just be for a pandemic. There's maintenance to think about these things as well. And again, depending on the material that you use, should influence whether or not you're going to get one of these, if you can get your hands on one of these, because everywhere I look, they're sold out.
All right, well, we'll leave the shoffices to one side, Lee. If you have been working from home this year, even for one day, you could be able to claim tax relief against increased costs. Now, HMRC have confirmed to This Is Money that the work from home tax relief scheme is being extended for the entirety of the 2021-22 tax year. So with the government still advising people to work from home if possible, millions are likely to be eligible to apply again this year. Lee, just very briefly, what is this and how can you claim?
It's a really simple one, this, Georgie. So basically last year, a couple of months into the pandemic, the government sort of changed the rules around this. So before the pandemic, you could only claim working from home, this tax relief, for the specific time you had to work from home. And then they ripped up the rule book and said, if you're going to work one day from home in this tax year, you can claim this tax relief. It's really simple to do. You just go on the government website. You will need a government gateway login, which I don't know if anyone's ever had to deal with that listening to this podcast, but sometimes can be one of those things where you set a password in sometime in the 2000s and then try to jump through hoops to get through it. Might not be worth the money that you can claim back. But I joke, people can claim this, and it's quite simple to do. 2 million people have already done it in the tax year for last year, and you can do it for the tax year last year and this tax year going forward. Yeah. All you have to say is that you've worked one day from home. So you don't have to prove that you've been doing it you know, week in, week out, some days in, some days out. And I think the government's just done that for ease, because probably having to process people's claims saying they're going in 1 week, not going in another week, you know, it just starts to get complicated for them. And for a basic rate taxpayer, you'll be looking at about 62 quid over the course of the year. And for a higher rate taxpayer, 124 quid. So if you're a higher rate taxpayer, for example, and you claim this for the 2 years, you know, it's 250 quid that you could get for this. Now, a lot of people will be listening to this and going, I don't deserve it, I shouldn't claim it, you know, I've saved on commuting costs and all that kind of thing. I totally understand. In fact, I'm in the same boat. I haven't claimed this tax relief, and I could easily qualify for this, as I would suspect a lot of office workers that have been working from home could. And actually, I was reading something the other day saying, if you feel that way, you should still claim it anyway and just donate the money to charity, which I thought was quite a nice idea. So yeah, it's simple to do. When it comes to tax, nothing ever tends to be that simple. But for this is actually about the most simple tax story I think I could ever describe to you on this podcast.
Wow. Which is a story in and of itself, Lee.
It is.
Well, let's talk about changing careers. We've talked about changing homes as a result of the pandemic, because, of course, it's had absolutely devastating impact on businesses. Hundreds of thousands have gone under, sadly, but a record number of startups as well have been launched during this time. Around 407,000 new businesses have been formed already. Millions dreaming of going it alone or having a complete career change. Why these figures, do you think, Lee? I mean, half of me thinks surely people would want to cling on with bloodied fingernails to something secure during this time. Why would be people thinking of launching a business or going freelance or anything like that, changing career completely?
I think setting up your own business and going freelance is one of those sort of sometimes you get pushed into action, Georgie, you know, as in, you know, unfortunately you might have lost your job during this pandemic, or maybe you've sat back and reflected and gone, do you know what, I wasn't happy in this job and perhaps it is time for me to do something new. I don't think it's ever really been easier to set up your own business. And the reason why I say that is, you know, things like e-commerce. I mean, online shopping in the pandemic has been absolute, you know, people have just taken to it even more so than we had done before. And I think a lot of people are sort of wising up to that fact and realizing that perhaps something that they can do from home might be a money spinner for them, and to give it a go. You know, it all depends, again, I keep saying this, but it's down to your personal circumstances, isn't it? How much of a savings buffer you might have built up, if any, if you have, what kind of idea it is that you want to go into business for. If you're going freelance, are you going freelance because you know the industry that you work in is robust and there's plenty of opportunities available to you? And all of these sorts of things. And working for yourself, sometimes that flexibility and thinking about you, you know, Georgie, because this is what you do in your life, and it gives you a variety, and it means you've mm-hmm. got lots of opportunities that open up for you. But, you know, on the flip side of that, sometimes, you know, it can be a bit uncertain. And we've had this whole situation, which I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole, but of this excluded movement and people, you know, yeah. saying that they've been treated unfairly throughout this pandemic. There were a cohort of people that haven't been listened to properly and have been left financially damaged. And you think about all those things, you think, what, people are going freelance, starting up their own businesses during a pandemic? That's brave. But sometimes, you know, you've got to do these things. You've got to take chances in life, haven't you, Georgie? And if you were in something that was making you miserable or doing something that was miserable, perhaps that's why people were doing it. And perhaps people now are thinking about changing career. It sounds crazy, but you might be in an industry where you've had to. I'm thinking a good example of this is the travel industry. You know, we're all hoping and praying that the travel industry gets back on its knees, you know, and everything starts going back to normal. But when can we confidently say that I think it's something, there's more than 100,000 people employed in the travel industry, I believe, in Britain. You know, when do we start looking at those levels again? You know, when do things start opening up? The flights, the holidays, business travel. Will business travel ever be the same ever again? All of these sort of little ticking concerns might be going around in someone's head. And I'm thinking of someone specific here, a friend who had already trained and done this before the pandemic. She trained to become a dog groomer. Now, actually, training to become a dog groomer takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of energy. It's not simply one day you wake up, you open a room in your house and go, right, come on, dogs, in you come. I'm going to cut your hair.
Got the clippers out
because, you know, you need to know all the different breeds. You know, need to know how to handle them all, that kind of stuff. She worked in the travel industry. She's located not far from Crawley. You know, that's where a lot hotbed of travel jobs are. She had this already in her back pocket, the fact that, you know, she is a dog groomer and she's a qualified dog groomer now. She had a space in her home where she could open it up. She had to go through the rigmarole of going through all sorts of council things that you have to do to start up a business from home, things like managing traffic and all those sort of things you might not think about. And she's been doing that as a sort of pivot, or I hate that term, but a pivot away from the travel industry, because although she wanted to hang on to this and maybe slowly get up a client base and do it slowly, build up, and then in the future perhaps think about leaving work and starting, she's been pushed into it, and it's kind of fortunate she had that to fall back on. So we had a story this week about sort of 8 career advice tips if you're thinking about changing career, and that's kind of the flavor of it, so to speak, as in trying to get a qualification. Perhaps there's this term about a bridging, sort of a bridging job. So, you know, if you do something in travel that's perhaps sales based, you know, you just bridge into another industry that's sales based. You might not have any experience in it, but you swat up on it and you go full gear on it because you think this industry is going to grow in the future. So there's always that possibility of not. I think when we think about changing career, we think about from turning to a doctor into a, I don't know, from a doctor into a whatever industry. Yeah. I can't think of it.
Flight attendant to a dog groomer.
So exactly, you know, we think about these complete like crazy changes, but in a lot of ways, you've got to think about the skills you have and how you can transfer them and bridge that into another job. I think is a quite a key consideration if you're thinking about changing career.
Yeah, I mean, there are quite a few tips in terms of bridging. I'd also say, unless of course you don't have a job at the moment, before you completely think about perhaps going freelance or starting up a business, test the water first, do a little bit on the side. Don't just go to your boss and tell him to stuff it because you've had enough. As a freelancer, during a difficult time, and Lee, yeah, we're not going to go down the route of government help schemes and all that thing. I mean, I'm fortunate with the variety that I do that this year's been an okay year, but there are many benefits to working for yourself. That freedom, you know, while other people are struggling to go and to do their kind of 9 to 5 or whatever, 8 until 6, I have that flexibility that on days where I just feel pretty rubbish or things aren't going great or whatever, then I have the flexibility to swap and change and move things around. And that's been invaluable during this time. But one thing I think that you have to do as a freelancer particularly is having that savings pot, that emergency savings pot, to give you the financial security in times of when your income isn't quite as steady as you'd like it to be, and your retirement saving. There's been a lot of concern, I think, that I've heard certainly from financial experts over the last year that, you know, freelancers particularly perhaps stopping paying into their pensions. We have had, you know, workplace pensions. People have been limiting their contributions, particularly after the first lockdown. Those appear to be back up and running again. But Lee, in terms of pensions, you've got an article on your website at Sarah Coles, Hargreaves Lansdowne. Fabulous. Bad news is that many workers are heading for disappointment when they retire on far less comfortable pensions than those enjoyed by today's older generation. And that's whether you're a staff member or you're self-employed, isn't it? But all is not lost, Lee. Lee, why are we all going to have a worse pension than our parents and grandparents, I guess?
Before I go down this scary, horrible story about pension worries, you know, that's just another worry to throw. Another worry to throw into the pot of everything that's going on. Just quickly, just to go back to that career change one, I just wanted to mention just one or two things else in that story, just really quickly. I think one of the key things is about networking, right? And you know this fully well. And I think making sure you get yourself out there. Now, the reason why I mentioned that is because you said earlier in the show about moving to Cornwall. And actually, we've got a guy in this story that I think sums it up really nicely. So he worked in the print industry in Peterborough. And in the pandemic, he decided actually to move down to Cornwall and try something completely new. And he started taking photographs of surfers in Cornwall. You know, they're still allowed to surf and do whatever they do there. And he was taking photos and he was sending them the images, getting their email address, sending them the images. He knew they'd post them up on social media, tag him in it. And then from that, he got business, people wanting one-to-one surf photography, and now he's made a career out of it. And just to mention someone else that that networks as well, I had a carpenter come around who actually listens to this podcast. So hi, Ash, if you're listening. And he basically, I said, look, you've done a great job. He built some wardrobes for us, inbuilt wardrobes. I said, you want me to go and network this, put this on, like, you know, social media, use this guy, watch your website. He was like, I'm being honest, mate. I just don't need it. It's like, I've just word of mouth networking. He was like, you're going to tell a couple of people that I've done a good job. And then they tell a couple of people that I've done a good job. And he's like, it's just snowballed. He's like, I just don't have time. So please don't mention me in any kind of social media. So I thought I'd just mention him on the podcast instead. And then the very last thing I wanted to mention about this, actually, only because I think for a rare thing that actually looks like it might be quite good, and I just want listeners to hear this in case it helps them out in any way, is that the government have launched this lifetime skills guarantee, and it started this month, and I think it's gone under the radar a little bit, but basically it means 11 million adults have access to almost 400 qualifications. It's a £95 million project from the government. Now, you can't use this if you've got A-level qualifications or higher. But if you're not in that boat, there is actually a number of courses that are now available on this lifetime skills guarantee. So if there's someone that you think might benefit from that, or you might benefit from that yourself, it's well worth checking out, because it might give you that prompt. It might give you that kind of inspiration to find a course that can help you find a different career, perhaps, you know, especially if you have lost your job, or you're, you know, completely at a loose end and you're fed up with doing whatever you're doing. I've heard at least half a dozen people who have lost their job and are doing delivery driving, for example. Now, I'm not saying that's not a noble profession. We've need people, the jobs are there, the demand is there to have these jobs open up. But that might not be what your career has been, but you've just had to take the work. You know, something like this might work for you. You might be able to go and see what courses are available, and then go for it. Where I think it might be good as well is for brushing up on things like IT skills. Yeah. So, you know, the world of work has, you know, really changed in the last 20 years, you know, and people might not feel confident in different ways and means on how to use a computer confidently, for example. But not just that, there's probably further courses in which a lot of jobs are in things like coding and front-end developing and all that kind of stuff. You know, there are the skills that are hopefully out there that are open up and accessible to people. So, you know, if you've got an interest, if there's a sort of, it's worth just going to have a look, seeing what's around in there. Maybe you want to become something more hands-on, you know, an engineer, a plumber, you know, something like that, and you've always thought about it but you've just never gone for it. This might just be an option to go and check out what's available on this website. I just thought it was worth a mention because I've not read an awful lot about it anywhere else. I think it's quite interesting because, you know, if 11 million people, this is open to, that's a lot of people, and 400 courses is a lot of courses. I'd love to hear someone that signed up for it, and we'll check back a couple of months and see how good it is and you know, hold it to account. But fingers crossed. But yeah, let's talk pensions, Georgie. let's segue back in and go into this pension story. So the headline, actually, when I read this story, so I edited this from our pensions reporter, Tandy Jeffries, and the headline was, "Will you suffer a horrible shock at retirement?" And I was scared. I was scared just from that opening headline. And I thought, oh, what's this going to say? And then it's 8 ways you could be poorer than you think, and how to build a better pension pot, a bigger pension pot. Now, this story really is sort of targeting people, I would say, on the whole, 40s and below, especially 30s and 40s, I would say, because I do think there is this kind of misconception sometimes about pensions in which people A, bury their head in their sands, have no idea what they're saving for retirement, have no interest. We've said this time and time again on the podcast, oh, you know, I don't need to worry about that now, you know, that's so far in the future, it'll all be okay, my parents were okay, so, you know, they've had enough to get by on. But there's a number of dangers from that, Georgie. And I think actually danger number one, people thinking that way, is the final salary pension. You know, a lot of our parents' generation were in final salary pensions. In fact, in 1997, half of workers had a final salary pension, also known as defined benefit in industry jargon. That's down to 27% now. So that's fallen pretty quickly. And most people now are saving to a defined contribution pension, a private pension, in which you forfeit a slab of your wage to go into a private pension, and it's invested, and you build up that pot as you go on over the years. So the age of these gold-plated pensions, these final salary pensions, are pretty much over. And then there's this kind of target figure that you should be saving around about 12.5% of your salary per month, which is a big, big slice of money. And again, this is all down individual circumstances again. So, you know, there's no one size fits all for this. But think about our parents' generation. Likelihood is that they got on the property ladder earlier, for example, and would have probably paid off their mortgage before they retired. There's quite a lot of data suggesting that people taking out mortgages now, you know, a typical mortgage would have been 25-year term. We've now got to a stage where people are stretching affordability criteria, having 35 to 40-year mortgages. If you're getting on the property ladder at 35, well, that means, you know, unless you are overpaying or depending on where your life goes, you could still be paying your mortgage in retirement. You know, that's something that's usually the biggest outgoing for someone. We're dealing with potentially a sort of later state pension. So state pension age is getting pushed back, and that's a process that's already beginning. So if you're someone in their 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, your state pension age is probably pushed back. We're living longer. That's a great thing. We're living longer. Oh, God, that means, pension. But it does mean that you're probably going to need to save more for your retirement because it's got to stretch longer. You know, and that's not, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's a great thing that we're living longer, but, you know, it is something that you have to consider. Another thing as well, a lot of people fall into this boat, this almost like sandwich generation, in which they have grown up children that live with them longer and they're a drain on finances, but are also looking after the parents and forking out for them as well. And it's kind of like, you know, that means you may be forfeiting some of your retirement plan, some of your retirement savings plan, and going, I can't afford to forfeit, you know, X percent of my wage each month. I need it for other expenses, which, you know, I totally get it. I think 12.5% for a lot of people is a lot of money. And I think the other thing to consider, and I think a lot of people do this, but again, it varies from person to person, is thinking about inheritance. So, you know, oh, well, I'm going to inherit my parents' house or my mum's house or my dad's house. We'll be all right. Or, you know, when they pass away, there's going to be X amount of money coming to me. I think it's a very dangerous game to play to put that as part of your retirement plan. I always think you've got to run your own race, Georgie, and you've got to look after yourself. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of people don't look at a longer term picture. They don't sit down, do that boring thing where you play around with some pension calculators, see what, you know, you would need, you know, a figure, say £500,000 that you need to save over your career to have a steady retirement, a retirement that you expect when you hit the age. I think people hear to £500,000, that's loads. Like, how am I ever going to save that? But, you know, as you go up your career, hopefully you earn more money. Hopefully your expenses go down a bit and you can up your pension contributions a bit. It's well worth just spending an afternoon looking at what your employer pension does. You know, if you put an X amount, your employer is going to put an X amount. It might even be, if you've been at a company for a certain amount of time, you put an X amount and they're going to double that. I mean, that is just free money. It's such a great way to save. And you mentioned there actually about freelance and the pension gap there. I mean, all I can say, and I keep badgering my best friend about this, he's freelance. He's been freelance forever. You know, he's in the IT industry. He makes a very good living. You know, he makes a good sizable salary. And I just keep badgering him about getting a SIP. But he hears SIP, he looks at it, he looks through it all, and he's like, you're going to have to sit down with me and explain all this and just tell me. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Which, look, I could totally get it. It's just, yeah, like, it's not his priority. You know, he owns a property, he's living a good life, he saves his money just into a savings account. But it's, you know, if you're in that boat,
top up though.
Yeah, exactly, Georgie. But I think sometimes, and it's no fault of his, he's just not interested. He's just not interested in it. And I've tried painting it in a kind of, you know, exciting way. You know, imagine all this free cash you can get. You know, look at the tax relief on this. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, wow, come on, let's do it. You know, even Vanguard's got a sip now. Come on, just open a Vanguard sip. It'll be easy. But, you know, I think someone like him would just benefit from some sound paid for financial advice, you know, about what he can do to make his money work harder in an age of rock bottom savings rates and, you know, banks not playing ball when it comes to making any kind of interest on stuff. So it, all is not lost, Georgie. I think there is a bit more pension engagement. I think auto enrollment has been a fantastic thing, but there is going to be a sort of lost decade of people that weren't in that as that was getting rolled out. They're in it now, but they missed out perhaps because they didn't take action and didn't really know what it was all about. And when you're first starting out your career, you're just happy to have a salary. You're happy to have a wage. I don't think you're really, the majority of people are thinking about, oh, actually, I said what I should do. I'm 21. It's my first job. I should definitely be tucking away 12.5% of my salary into a pension because future me is going to thank me for this. Some people might think like that, you know. I certainly didn't think like that in my early 20s. It took me until my mid to late 20s to wake up and realize that I wasn't saving enough in my pension. I think a lot of people are like that. It's no criticism. That's just life. You know, people prioritize getting on the property ladder. I would say we've got this obsession about getting on the property ladder in this country over retirement saving, rightly or wrongly. People want somewhere to live, you know, and they want a roof over their head that's theirs. But that might mean that they neglect their pension a little bit and don't think about it until they're way later and almost having to pay catch up. So look, if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, no matter your age, just get out, crunch some figures. There's loads of great calculators on all of these kind of pension websites. Find out who your pension provider is if you don't know that. Have a look what your pension's invested in, how its performance is doing, the percentage of your wage going in, what's your employer going to put in. It's just an afternoon that could make you far richer in retirement.
Just get started. The best advice I got, Holly Mackay, Boring Money, by the way. Thank you very much, Holly. She just said, just open a SIP with a, you know, it was a big firm. I won't say who it was. It can be anyone, really. Well, not anyone, obviously. You know, do your research. If it's the good ones.
Actually, have I told you I've got a SIP? Just while I need money, I charge 20%
exactly,
fee.
Exactly, voice SIP. Just open it up and get started, and you'll change it, and you'll get more involved with it as time goes on. But the key is just to get started. All right, Lee, before we come to the end, we do have the next stage of the roadmap. We can have a pint in the freezing cold, a haircut, though not extensions or hair dyeing, I'm told, which I'm gutted about. Staycations, spotted non-essential retail therapy. And your plans for, have we called it something like Magic Monday yet? Has it got a name?
I like Magic Monday. Yeah, I think that's got a certain sort of feel about it. That sounds nice. I hate the term roadmap, though. I mean, can we not just say plan? The plan. What's this roadmap all about? I mean, honestly.
It doesn't feel like we're driving anyway. It feels like we're walking very slowly.
Yeah, exactly. A roadmap in which we're literally walking through treacle, a road made of treacle. Monday, I'm in the office, which I'm very excited about. Actually, I have been in once or twice the last couple of weeks, and it's been really nice because we employed someone, Helen, if you're listening, hello. And we actually hadn't met her. We interviewed her on Zoom. Wow. She started in December, and we finally met her last week, which was lovely. It was just really nice to be like, wow, here's our colleague that we've actually met, you know, in the flesh. But for April, Georgia, I have got some really, really exciting plans. Next week, definitely getting a haircut in because I've been hacking at my hair with an electric razor.
Doesn't look too bad.
Oh, it looks right from the front, but you can't see my wrap out in the back. It does not look good. I've got the real rock and roll things. I booked these in early because I thought they were going to get busy. The dentist and the optician, they both had a 6 to 8 week wait to get in round here.
Opticians have been open throughout, Lee. I've got myself a brand new pair of glasses.
Yeah, but it hasn't been an emergency. It hasn't been like I need to go to the opticians like urgently, but like I do need to go now because I need some new glasses and I need a new prescription. But those couple of things I've got in, I've even got a staycation booked in for next weekend.
Me.
Went early. I went really early. The day the plan or roadmap got announced, I realized that next weekend is my wife's birthday. And last year, obviously, it was a bit of a funny birthday in which my real health conscious wife didn't know what we were going to do. And we ended up ordering a pizza from a big pizza chain, which we never, ever, ever do. And she was sort of eating it. And she was like, "Don't really like this. This is like probably been the worst birthday ever." Oh, and I was like, "Okay, what shall I do this year?" So we've got a self-contained holiday cottage in Kent. I'm really looking forward to going to Camber Sands on the near Rye as well. Lots of walking and stuff hopefully planned. And I have been doing this year, if anyone follows me on Twitter, might be seeing that every month I've been ordering beers from an independent brewery up and down the country. It's been a great endeavour. I've absolutely loved it. Wife is like, "Have you ordered more beers?" I'm like, it's a New Year's resolution. Every month I'm getting a new box of beers.
It's a great New Year's resolution.
It's been fantastic. It's the first time I've got to April and I'm still going with it. So, I mean, I finally found a New Year's resolution that I can sort of get on board with. But what I've decided is next week I'm going to go and get a crisp pint. And I'm going to go and get a crisp pint at Leon C Brewery, which is about 5-10 minute drive from my house. I ordered a box of beers from them and they've been fantastic. And I'm going to keep supporting local and I'm going to go to its tap room and I'm going to sit out in the sunshine and I'm going to have a really, really nice crisp pint of beer, a pack of pork scratchings and think, are we now at the end of this pandemic? Is this it? Is this, hopefully there's going to be a ray of light shining down on me and it's going to be magic week, magic April. What about you, Georgie? What are you doing? What are your plans?
I couldn't get a hairdresser until the 29th. And then I read that they can't have highlights anyway. So I think I'm going to have to just stick with brown at the moment. Nothing exciting. Hoping that I can head to the pub at some stage. But that's really, really about it, Lee. I've got the gas man coming around in a week.
Oh, that sounds quite exciting. Why don't you come up to London, meet Simon and I in the next couple of weeks. We'll have a nice crisp beer and we'll talk about everything about the podcast. We'll do the podcast out in the sunshine. Yes, that's it. We're doing a pub garden podcast sometime this month. You heard it here.
I think we could do it. I think we should.
Yes.
All right. Well, let us know what you're up to. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team, anything you'd like them to look into, or let us know what you're up to next week, Lee.
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can also visit the article which the podcast is published in and comment in there. And also give us a little mention at This Is Money on Twitter. Come and say hello.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.